morning, everyone. I call this special meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to order. It is 10:01, Friday, August 4th, 2023. I am the Commission Chairman, Randy Christman, joined by fellow Commissioner Sherry Haugen Hoppert and our alternate decision maker in this case, Mr. Tim Dawson. So we have a quorum. Earlier this week, so we've had this case going on for since last fall when it was applied, and in the beginning of February when we deemed the application complete. Earlier this week, I was in the process of planning a work session in this case. And for you, those of you who don't follow us, that would be a more informal thing where the decision makers and our staff kind of discuss concepts and stuff to prepare an order to vote on. And as I was working on that, the outcome seemed, I guess, so obvious to me that I just decided to work with staff on a draft order to see how it would look. And after working on it with them, it seemed even more obvious to me what the end case of this was. So I believe staff ultimately sent it to each of you, a draft to review. So you've had an opportunity to think about it, prepare amendment proposals, or you can reject my motions and we'll work on scheduling work sessions. But I will say that getting together is a little tougher in a case with an alternate decision maker because you're not in the offices with us. And when we do, that does add cost to us for handling the case, which ultimately goes back to the applicant because they file through a filing fee that we use for our costs in the case. So that's why another reason why I thought, as I said, I thought the ultimate decision was obvious enough. Why don't we just move forward and see if, in fact, we're all on the same page. We have really two main issues to decide in this case. The confidentiality, the protection of information decision, and then the case itself for the findings of facts, conclusion of law, and the final order. So with that, I guess I didn't ask if either there are any opening comments.
No, I have no opening comments.
No opening comments for me.
Okay, so to address the protection of information first, I move the commission adopt the order on protection of information in SCS Carbon Transport LLC, Midwest Carbon Express CO2 Pipeline Project Siting Application, case number PU-22-391.
Second.
On April 21st, SCS filed an application for protection of information. On May 1st, John H. Warford Jr. filed an objection and also a request for hearing on that topic. On June 27th, we held a hearing. The information for which SCS seeks protection is related to dispersion modeling in the event of a release of carbon dioxide from the pipeline. Given the sensitive nature of the information, SCS stated that it will request that PHMSA protect these materials from public release and is requesting the Public Service Commission protect the information too. During the hearing, SCS argued that under state law, federal laws, the information the information should be protected. It argued that PHMSA has previously determined similar information, such as spill modeling information, should be protected to prevent its use by bad actors. SCS also stated that the determination has been affirmed by the courts. SCS provided examples demonstrating that the risk of the use of this information by bad actors is not hypothetical. Counsel for the interveners both acknowledged that some information likely should be subject to protection, but argued that all information being protected cannot be correct. Both interveners disputed the federal protection cited as it relates to the information. They also provided the past cited, they also provided that past cited projects with this agency provided similar information without protection.
I'm sorry. people should take a sip of coffee.
Purpose of the hearing was to determine whether the application to protect the information from public disclosure should be granted. Refrigerated CO2 is defined by PHMSA as a hazardous material. SCS pipeline meets the definition of critical infrastructure under North Dakota Century Code. The disclosure of plume modeling could provide information on where damaging or vandalizing the pipeline by a bad actor would have a debilitating impact on security and state public health and safety. So prevention of receipt of this information by bad actors necessitates the PSC limiting access to the information. The argument that other entities previously filed similar information without requesting protection is unpersuasive. Therefore, there has been growing vigilance for the protection of data and information related to the operations and locations of critical infrastructure. This is also reflected in legislative history. So the conclusions of law on this would read that the commission concludes that the information is a security system plan for critical infrastructure that may be exempt from public disclosure, and concludes that SCS's application satisfies the requirements of North Dakota Century Code for protection of information. And so the order would read, the commission orders the April 21, 2023 application of SCS Carbon Transport LLC for protection of information is granted.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Sensing none, I will move to roll call vote. Chair Chrisman?
Aye.
Commissioner Haugenhofer?
Aye.
Substitute decision maker Dawson?
Aye.
Motion is approved.
Well, one seemed non-controversial or within this group. I'll move to the next topic. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order in SCS Carbon Transport LLC, Midwest Carbon Express CO2 Pipeline Project, citing application case number PU-22-391.
Second.
So, preliminary statement, just some things that the public should be aware of, it'll highlight. On October 17th of 2022, SCS Carbon Transport filed applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and for a route permit concerning approximately 320 miles of carbon dioxide pipeline. For the public, to just because these terms are used so much, very generally, the corridor is kind of a working area. They applied for 300 feet. 200 feet is kind of a common one. The route is really where the pipeline would be within the corridor. This would be in 10 North Dakota counties. Also on October 17th, SCS filed an application for waivers of procedures and time schedules. That is a very common practice in these cases. On February 1st of this year, the commission deemed the applications complete and issued a notice scheduling four separate public hearings, March 14th at Bismarck, March 28th at Gwinner, April 11th at Wahpeton, and May 9th at Linton. So you can see we spread them out for the public's convenience. Due to the length of the March 14th hearing, on March 20th, the commission scheduled an additional hearing for June 2nd at Bismarck. But the day before that, on June 1st, SCS filed a motion to declare Emmons County and Burley County ordinances superseded and preempted. Also on June 1st, Randall Bakke filed a petition to reopen the proceedings and schedule an additional public hearing. Also on June 1st, busy day, SAS filed a pre-filed direct testimony of four witnesses and a market research letter from Boulder Appraisal. The next day, on June 2nd, public hearing was held as scheduled here in Bismarck. I'm going to go through some findings of fact. There's pages of these, but some highlights that I think should be taken note of. One of the requirements, SAS initiated correspondence seeking comments from federal, state, and local agencies regarding the project. There are 44 of them altogether that they sought information from. If we approve this, they're listed on the top of page 5 of the order, at least it's in this draft. SCS conducted a class 1 cultural literature review and a desktop analysis for wetlands, water bodies, and other sensitive environmental resources. They conducted surveys for threatened and endangered species, critical habitats, wetlands, water bodies, and trees and shrubs. And they conducted a class 3 cultural resource inventory across a portion of the survey area. The class 3 report was submitted to the State Historical Preservation Office, and in a response dated March 1st, SHPO advised that the report does not meet the standards, and they have not received a revised report addressing their concerns. SHPO concurrence is commonly required by the Commission for the issuance of a site certificate or route permit. SCS did not address SHPO's concerns further during the proceedings. Cultural resource impacts have not been properly addressed. The Commission received extensive, broad concerns regarding eminent domain, safety, the policy of permanent CO2 sequestration and storage, setback distances, irreparable harm to underground drain tile systems, impacts on property values, and the ability to obtain liability insurance due to this project. Having considered the public comments, the issues of eminent domain, safety compliance with PHMSA construction and operations, and permanent sequestration and storage of CO2 are outside the jurisdiction and consideration of this commission. Commenters asserted that greater setback distances should be considered for CO2 pipelines. But North Dakota Century Code specifies that areas within 500 feet of an inhabited rural residence must be an avoidance area unless waived by the owner. No testimony was presented that provided a sufficient basis to depart from the avoidance requirements set forth in state statute. Several commenters expressed that the project will cause irreparable harm to their underground drain tile systems. Proper drain tile system repair and or replacement will produce minimal adverse effects. Commenters and interveners asserted that the project will cause significant adverse effects on the value of their property and residential development projects. SCS filed a letter from Boulder Appraisal summarizing the effect of existing natural gas and hazardous liquids pipelines upon the development and sale of current residential properties in Bismarck. The filing was not tendered during a hearing, and the parties and commission were not afforded an opportunity to question the documents or witness, as required by North Dakota Administrative Code. This limits the weight that the commission is willing to provide to that document. While some witnesses stretched the plausibility of the adverse impacts on future property values and development, based upon the record, the effects have not been adequately minimized for the welfare of the people and the environment of the state. A number of commenters provided that the project will make them unable to purchase liability insurance due to the risk of a release. SCS testified that it would hold the liability for a rupture of the project unless the rupture was caused by a third-party line strike. Based upon the testimony, no additional requirements are needed to ensure the project will have minimal adverse impacts on the liability insurance of the landowners. SES requested the commission to supersede and preempt the ordinances of both Emmons and Burley counties. North Dakota Century Code supersedes and preempts any local land use or zoning regulations from the regulations, ordinances, and plans related, except the ordinances related to road use agreements. Therefore, the question of whether the ordinances are unreasonably restrictive is moot because Century Code supersedes them. LIUNA, the Laborers International Union, intervened in this proceeding and submitted testimony relating to the benefits of hiring a local labor force for transmission projects and the safety record of contractors SES intends to use to construct the project. And I will say that LIUNA's assertions in relation to SES's plans for the construction of the project are not applicable to our jurisdiction in this case, but I really appreciate their coming forth with the information they provide, especially regarding benefits of hiring local. I want to discuss a little bit the siting criteria that we work with under law. We've established criteria pursuant to North Dakota Century Code to guide the site, corridor, and route suitability evaluation and designation process. Site criteria are classified in four categories. We have exclusion areas, avoidance areas, selection criteria, and policy criteria. And I'll discuss those. An exclusion area is a geographic area that must be excluded in the consideration of a route. Areas critical to the life stages of threatened or endangered animal or plant species are designated as exclusion areas. This project will cross the Missouri River, but it's using horizontal directional drilling. The piping plover habitat is not beneath the Missouri River, so a reasonable buffer zone exists for the protection of the piping plover's habitat, and there is no evidence of an adverse impact there. SES's studies and surveys did not record any other exclusion areas within the survey area. No other exclusion areas were presented by an intervener, the public, or our commission staff. Moving to avoidance areas, these are geographic areas that may not be considered in the routing of a transmission facility unless the applicant shows that under the circumstances, there is no reasonable alternative. Economic considerations alone will not justify the approval of avoidance areas. National wildlife refuges are designated avoidance areas. SES's studies and surveys identified the Dakota Lake National Wildlife Refuge, which is in Dickey County, and it is within the proposed corridor. The refuge does not encompass more than 50% of the corridor width, and it will not be crossed by the route. And so the impact to the refuge is at an acceptable minimum. Game management areas are also designated avoidance areas, and SES's studies and surveys indicated that 6 waterfowl production areas are within the proposed corridor. In 4 instances, they encompass greater than 50% of the corridor width. SES did not demonstrate that there is no reasonable alternative to a route through the avoidance areas. Therefore, the impacts on game management areas in North Dakota are not at an acceptable minimum. Areas that are geologically unstable are avoidance areas. In a letter dated March 3rd, the North Dakota Geological Survey noted 14 areas of potential geologic instability within the project corridor. SES has not submitted information to the commission demonstrating how it has addressed the concerns raised by the geological survey. SES has not properly addressed areas that are geologically unstable. Areas within 500 feet of a residence, school, or place of business are avoidance areas. These avoidance areas may be waived by the owner SCS's studies and surveys identified 8 residential structures and 1 business within 500 feet of the project. SCS has provided a waiver for 1 of the residences, but SCS submitted that it will not construct within 500 feet of the remaining residences or businesses without obtaining and filing with the commission signed waivers from the owners of these structures. SCS's studies and surveys did not record any other avoidance areas within the survey area. No other avoidance areas were presented by an intervener, the public, or our staff. Moving to selection criteria, in accordance with the commission's selection criteria, corridor or route shall be approved only if it is determined that any significant adverse effects will be at an acceptable minimum. The project's impact upon agriculture and livestock will be at an acceptable minimum. However, the company has not taken steps to address some outstanding legitimate impacts expressed by some individual landowners during public comment or demonstrated why a reroute is not feasible in those instances. I want to point out some additional measures to minimize impact. SCS testified that it will have an operations control center in Ames, Iowa, that will be monitored 24 hours per day. The project will include a supervisory control and data acquisition system that will communicate with all field sites and provide real-time information of the system's operations. The operations control center will have the capability to remotely shut down pump stations and isolate pipeline segments in the event abnormal operating conditions are observed. SCS noted in its application that meetings have occurred with the emergency management directors of all counties crossed by the project. The emergency management directors were asked to provide a list of equipment needs in order to respond to potential incidents. SCS requested a 300-foot corridor width in its application. And for your reference, that is finding of fact number 6 back on page 3. And that is wider than what this commission has normally granted. During the hearing, SCS testified that they would not object to the PSC issuing a narrower corridor designation of 200 feet in width. Commissioners also requested response from SCS on a number of other issues. Some of the requests were regarding rerouting the project on specific agricultural properties, confirmation on the number of 500-foot setback waivers required and obtained, follow-up with the North Dakota Geological Survey, SHPO concurrent status, and an analysis of a South Bismarck alternate route. SCS either did not adequately address these requests or did not tender a witness to answer questions, as I mentioned before, is required under North Dakota Administrative Code. The basis for SCS's recommended denial of Mr. Bakke's June 1st petition to reopen the proceeding and hold an additional public hearing was an assertion by SCS that it has provided a full and complete record in this proceeding. SCS has not provided sufficient evidence to demonstrate that the location, construction, operation, and maintenance of the project will produce minimum adverse impacts upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota with the existing record. So to highlight some of the conclusions of law here, based on findings of fact, North Dakota Century Code supersedes and preempts any local land use or zoning regulations, aside from regulations, ordinances, and plans related to road use agreements. Therefore, the question of whether the ordinances are unreasonably restrictive is moot. Adherence to applicable procedures, requirements, and time schedules should not be waived. To waive any procedures, requirements, and time schedules as requested is inappropriate. SCS failed to meet its burden of proof to show the location, construction, operation, and maintenance of the project will produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota. SCS failed to meet its burden of proof to show the project will minimize adverse human and environmental impact, and SCS failed to meet its burden of proof to show the location, construction, and operation of the project are compatible with environmental preservation and efficient use of resources. If some of those sounded repetitive, those are kind of responses to the things that we noticed publicly that we were looking for answers to in our notice of public hearings. So if you all agree with me on this, to kind of just encapsulate, if this is approved, the commission would order SCS's application for a waiver of procedures and time schedules is denied. Their application for a certificate of corridor compatibility is denied. Their application for a route permit is denied. Their motion to declare Emmons County and Burley County ordinances superseded and preempted is moot. The petition to reopen the proceedings and schedule an additional public hearing is denied, and any outstanding procedural motions are denied. With that, before I turn it over to whoever wants to go first, spent a lot of time working on something that I thought was quite clear, and so that I'm hopeful that you will agree with. And near the end, I realized something in there that I'm not comfortable with. And so I want to propose an amendment to what's in front of you. And so if you would go to page 11, number 42, in the fourth line, and I, so our first bullet will be on this amendment, and then we'll get back to the order either as presented or as amended. I move that in the fourth line, the words plume modeling be removed.
We have a motion for amendment. I'll take a roll call vote.
You need a second.
Oh, sorry.
Second.
Thank you. We now have a motion and a second on the amendment. Chair Christman?
Aye.
Commissioner Haugenhofer?
Aye.
Substitute decision maker Dawson?
Aye.
The amendment is adopted.
Okay.
Is there any further discussion on the original motion?
With those two words removed.
Is there any further discussion on the amended?
I apologize. I just want, in reference to page 19, I believe, of the order.
This is 12.
Oh, page, I'm sorry. Number 19. But I think it was clarified in the conclusion of law, where it states, this has to do with the Emmons and Burley County ordinance. I just want to say that public safety was a very extensive point to this pipeline en route. And I acknowledge Emmons and Burley County for bringing forth and working so diligently on the safety for the community. And because we're denying this route, I think for us to take that up is moot. We shouldn't have to take that up because we're denying it. And I don't want to see it. I believe Mr. Crispin, in your order brought forth, you're saying that in the order that the motion to declare Emmons County and Burley County ordinance is moot. I want to be clear on that. Or are we saying that we are superseding that and accepting, overruling that?
it's moot. My opinion is that the law is clear.
Okay. I don't think that that's been properly vetted. I'm not saying that I, if it comes up before that, I wouldn't agree with it. But because, again, I'm going to emphasize that that hasn't been vetted and public safety is an issue, I'm going to move the commission amend the finding of facts, conclusion of law, in order as follows. Finding of fact, paragraph 19 is amended to.
Oops, let me get the page.
Okay, finding of facts, paragraph 19 is amended to. CSC has requested the commission to supersede and preempt the ordinance of both Emmons and Burleigh counties, North Dakota. CSC has not filed an application with whether county, with either county for a variance or waiver of their ordinance. The conclusion of law, paragraph 4 is amended to, due to the application being denied, the issue of whether the county ordinance are automatically superseded and exempted is moot, and the removal of ordering paragraph 4, number 4. That is my motion.
Is there a second?
I'll second it for the purpose of a discussion.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion?
Yes. I just handed out to sheets here with language from Century Code. You'll notice on one of them where it says page 7 on the bottom, that's from chapter 49 22.1-13, which has to do with gas and liquid conversion and transmission facilities like we're talking about here. The other one that shows page 9 on the bottom, that is from chapter 49 22-16. That has to do with electric energy conversion and transmission facilities. If you look at number 2 in the electrics, the law makes clear that our decision may not supersede or preempt local land use on a conversion facility, a power plant, say. But on a transmission facility, our decision does supersede the locals, but there's a clause at the end, upon a finding that the rule, regulation, or ordinance is unreasonably restrictive. The legislature addressed that for electric projects. But then looking at chapter 49, 22.1, dealing with pipelines, gas and liquid facilities, again, for the plants, the energy conversion facilities, may not supersede or preempt any local land use zoning or building rules, regulations, or ordinances. But when it gets to gas or liquid transmission facility, a pipeline within a designated corridor supersedes and preempts any local land use or zoning regulations, period. However, the next section does point out that their road use agreements can supersede ours. So, people can ask their legislators why they did electric different than pipelines, but they did. And I'm going by what's written in, I think, very clear law.
Mr. Crispin, I understand what the law says, but pertaining to this, carbon capture has not filed an application within either county for a variance or waiver of their ordinance, and we have not vetted this. The route was, we were proposing that the route be denied, therefore it kind of ends there. But to say we've concluded that, I'm not comfortable with. So I bring, like I said, I bring forward my motion.
Is there any further discussion?
Mine? Yes, it is, Mr. Tuttle.
Is there any further discussion?
Well, I'm caught between a rock and a hard place. I agree with Commissioner Crispin on his interpretation of the law and that it is moot for that purpose, but it's also maybe moot as a procedural matter, as Commissioner Haugenhoffert is talking about. If it came to us, let's say, as a motion, and we have that motion before us, we can say that it's moot and we can decide it without deciding the motion, or we can decide the motion. So there's two kinds of mootness here, and both of them have some validity. And with that, I'm still thinking about my answer to this. I'll come up with one in a few seconds.
I will move to a roll call vote if we are ready.
This is on the motion to amend.
Motion to amend.
Presented by Commissioner Haugenhoffert.
Correct. Chair Crispin?
Nay.
Commissioner Haugenhoffert?
Aye.
Substitute decision maker Dawson?
Aye.
The amendment is approved. And we will move back to the motion on the order as amended.
And I know I followed you as you went. So the amendments were on section 19, correct?
I'm going to hand you my motion here for you to reference.
Okay, but is it, it's the change was in section 19 and then order number?
Conclusions of law number four.
Conclusion of law number four, 19 and four.
Correct.
That's it, right?
And then the removal of the ordering paragraph four.
Is there any further discussion on the order, the motion of the order as amended? Sensing none, I will move to a roll call vote. Chair Crispin?
Aye.
Commissioner Haugenhoffert?
Aye.
Substitute decision maker Dawson?
Aye.
Motion is approved.
Well, with a couple of little changes, I think it turns out I was right that we're generally on the same page in the direction of this case. And so I do want to say that for those of you who aren't familiar with this, it's a longstanding tradition at the commission that we open up for questions from the press after our meetings, because we have always thrived on being transparent. I want to say, though, before we get into that, that my decision on this case is not indicative of my opinions regarding CO2 sequestration or importation of CO2 via pipeline at all. This is only about this project in this location under these circumstances. And I also want to say that for my part, I'm going to leave most questions to our attorney in this case, Mr. Zach Pelham. And the reason is that if the company chooses to start over and reapply, I don't want any answers that I give here off the cuff to be taken as a comprehensive to-do list for building a new application. And then, while you didn't mention that, it's not that. And if the applicant chooses to appeal this decision to the courts, I think it's just best to let the official hearing records, the findings of fact, the conclusions of law, and the orders stand for themselves. Did either of you have any comments before we open up for the press?
No, I agree with you, Chairman Crisman, that we don't know where this case is going to go. So I too would refer to questions to our counsel, Zach Pellman. But I do want to say one thing. I am very thankful for everyone who was very involved in this case. To see the interest equals to me educating ourselves on what the PSC does, our laws, and what it all means. So I want to thank people for being engaged, professional, and being here today. And I continue to believe that ag and energy both have a place in this state, and that we can work collaboratively together. So with that, I just want to say thank you to all of you for being so involved and professional in this, in these hearings.
Okay, with that, we will stick around outside of the official meeting and take questions. If there are questions, and for you, Mr. Pellman, I'd ask that you grab a microphone for that. But with that, this meeting is adjourned.